On This Week in Enterprise Tech, we have Mr. Brian Chee, Mr. Curtis Franken back on the show. Generative AI is the new hotness. We know this. The question we're going to pose to the panel today is, AI automation out to take our jobs, or is it to prevent burnout? It's a really good question. Lots of point of view there. So we're going to go into that. As IT priorities continue to shift, especially in cybersecurity. Today, we have Ram Vaidyanathan. He's IT security evangelist from Manage Engine. And we're going to talk about priorities, budget, and AI ops. You definitely shouldn't miss it. Quiet on the set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 545, recorded May 26th, 2023. AI FUD. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Collide. Collide is a device trust solution that ensures that if a device isn't secure, you can't access your apps. It's zero trust for Okta. Visit collide.com/TWiT and book a demo today. And by Worldwide Technology. With an innovative culture, thousands of IT engineers, application developers, unmatched labs, and integration centers for testing and deploying technology at scale, WWT helps customers bridge the gap between strategy and execution. To learn more about WWT, visit WWT.com/TWiT. And by Lookout. Whether on a device or in the cloud, your business data is always on the move. Minimize risk, increase visibility, and ensure compliance with Lookout's unified platform. Visit Lookout.com today. Welcome to TWiT, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world's connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide through the big world of the enterprise. But I can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in the professionals, the experts, start their very own Mr. Curtis Franklin, principal analyst at Omdia, and all-around enterprise expert. Curtis, it's been a busy week in the enterprise. How are you this week?
Oh, it's been a busy week for me as well. I'm glad to finally be here on TWiT because it means that this busy week is coming to an end. Have a couple of big things that have gone up over at Omdia.com for our subscribers. Also looking at some trends going on in the training world as we bring risk into how we assess the effectiveness of training, looking at insurance, and believe it or not, talking about how AI is playing out in cybersecurity. Believe it or not, that's one of the things people are talking about. Who knew? All that, plus getting ready for some upcoming things, give a little bit of a tease there, and talk about that a little bit more at the bottom of the show.
Sounds good. Well, speaking of security, we're not going to be talking about that today either. So that's not a very important topic these days. But we'll see what's going on later. Well, we'll talk about important. We have to also talk about Mr. Brian Chee as well. He's a very important co-host of the show and always welcome back to the show. He's actually busy working on still working on fiber cheaper between the two buildings there.
Well, that particular fiber run is done, tested, and in production. But there are several more runs. I'm going to be stringing fiber all over the place because if we want to be able to go and compete with the big expo centers, we're going to have to make sure the network is reliable. That means dual path for everything.
Are you putting redundancy in there? How is that going to cost more to lace to put up some more wires, or what's going to happen there?
Well, the good news is I got a great deal on what's called FTTH fiber.
Fell off the back of a truck, right?
No, not really, but it wasn't too bad. It was like about $1,100 with shipping for 3 1-kilometer spools.
Wow.
And so that should be enough for me to go and hit all the buildings in the fairground and try and start catering to the big boys and say, hey, we can be your expo alternative and we're going to charge you a lot less money. And maybe you can actually offer free parking to your people instead of charging a lot of money. So ought to be fun.
Well, thanks, Cheever, for being here. Well, generative AI is a new hotness. And the question we're going to pose all of you guys is AI generated automation taking our jobs or preventing burnout? It's a really good question, and I'm sure we'll have lots to talk about there. IT priorities continue to shift, especially in cybersecurity. Today, we have Ram Vaidyanathan. He's IT security evangelist from ManageEngine. We're going to talk about budgets, priorities for those budgets, and of course, AI ops. So lots coming up, so definitely stick around. But before we do, let's go ahead and jump into this week's news clips. If we want to talk about successful cyber attacks, Mirai is one example that's the gift that keeps on giving. Now, this article from IEEE delves into the intriguing story of the Mirai botnet, which was created by a group of tech-savvy youngsters. Now, to give you a bit history here, Mirai was created back in 2016 by three teenage boys. And as you know, it's a botnet that infected smaller IoT-like devices like webcams and routers. Now, it was intentionally designed to take down the internet by launching distributed denial of service attacks. Now, these attacks were initially intended to promote a DDoS mitigation business called ProTraf Solutions. Parash Jha, along with his accomplices Josiah White and Dalton Norman, transformed a malware named QBot into the infamous Mirai botnet. Now, the botnet rapidly spread, infected 65,000 devices in the first 20 hours, and it was designed to control Internet of Things, with the trio exploiting their advantage as the only major botnet after law enforcement dismantled all of their competitors. Now, after using the botnet for 2 months, RS released the Mirai source code online and potentially as a strategy to deflect attention from law enforcement investigations. Now, the release resulted in numerous imitations, leading to a large-scale set of attacks, including one on a DNS service provider, Dyn DNS, which disrupted a ton of major websites out there. Now, the group eventually left DDoS attacks for a more lucrative venture, Click Fraud. That's right, which was immensely profitable for them. However, their past caught up with them eventually, as the FBI had been collecting evidence against the trio for their involvement with Mirai. Now, facing irrefutable proof there, the three pleaded guilty, surprisingly due to their assistance in helping the FBI to catch other cyber criminals. They were sentenced to probation and community service rather than jail time. Super lucky. Now, Mirai was incredibly successful. Part of the reason for its success was that Mirai was built using a technique called script kiddie hacking. Now, this means that teenagers who created it didn't have any special skills or knowledge. They simply used publicly available tools and resources to put together their malware. Mirai was a major wake-up call for the community, especially the security community, and it showed that even inexperienced hackers can create powerful and destructive tools. In the wake of the Mirai attack, there has been a renewed focus on securing devices. However, it's likely that Mirai-like botnets will continue to be a threat in the future. And they may be asking, how in the world can my organization protect myself from this? Well, take a moment, think about a couple of these. Keep your IT devices or all your devices with up to date with the latest security patches. Let's use strong passwords for your devices. Enable two-factor and multi-factor for them. Be careful about what apps you install on your devices, and only install apps from trusted sources.
Well, it used to be that you knew what a given nation state actor, what the security business calls an APT or Advanced Persistent Threat, was after in their malicious campaigns. While any would take money if it fell into their laps, Russia was after political objectives. North Korea needed cash. Iran wanted to follow protesters and sprinkle some chaos around. And China was harvesting intellectual property. Well, all that changed a bit this week when researchers at Microsoft broke news of Volt Typhoon, a China-based malicious campaign that lays some serious groundwork for a disruptive strike on critical infrastructure. Launched against victims in Guam, Volt Typhoon targets organizations in the communications, government, utility, manufacturing, maritime, and other critical sectors. The campaign looked first as though it was just another cyber espionage operation, but the group's targeting of Guam, which is a strategic base for defending Taiwan against potential Chinese annexation, along with other evidence that Microsoft has examined, suggests that the actor is also laying the groundwork for attacks that could disrupt U.S.-Asia communications in a kinetic conflict. Kinetic conflict here being insider speak for shooting war. The apparent preparation for disruptive attacks that Microsoft observed marks a significant departure from most cyber attacks by Chinese groups over the past, two decades. So far, at least, though, all of these earlier campaigns have involved Chinese groups that have not shown they can wreak widespread havoc on U.S. critical infrastructure. At least researchers haven't uncovered any evidence. But no one doubts that they and other nation-state-backed groups, especially Russian APT, can. In recent years, Chinese APT groups have gotten significantly better at discovering and exploiting zero days, better, in fact, than any other group. And they've also typically been among the fastest to exploit newly discovered flaws. China has also shown a decided preference for using exploited edge devices as mechanisms in their operations. Volt Typhoon is no exception to this last thing. Microsoft's analysis showed the threat actor proxying all network traffic via compromised routers and small SOHO edge devices from companies like Asus, Netgear, D-Link, and Cisco.
So a big thank you to the folks at Dark Reading for this article. And the headline is, enterprises must prepare now for shorter TLS certificate lifespans. Now, before I go and dive into this article, I will say there has been lots and lots and lots of conversations at lots of different conferences and lots of different specialty groups saying, hey, with certificates having longer lifespans, that means if something is, you know, breached or something is stolen, as far as a certificate goes, you could have that particular certificate doing damage, being used for botnets and so forth, for up to 398 days. Well, so on March 3rd, Google, via the Chromium projects, which it controls, proposed a plan to drastically shorten the lifespan of the Transport Layer Security TLS digital certificates from 398 days to 90 days. This will spur significant changes in how organizations manage their certificates, particularly regarding automated processes. The proposal by the open source body behind the Google Chrome browser and Chrome OS included in a roadmap called, quote, moving forward together, unquote, is a positive step towards ensuring more reliable, robust web operations. But it will require companies and other organizations to significantly transform their certificate processes. The lifespan of digital certificates has fallen steadily over the past decade, from 5 years back in 2012 to a little more than 2 years in 2018 to 13 months or 398 days in July of 2020. The shorter lifespans help ensure the accuracy of digital identities, especially in cloud-based computing environment where websites and services are constantly being spun up or down to accommodate changing demands and priorities. Google said the proposed changes would allow for faster adoption of improvements such as best practices and new security capabilities and encourage organizations to move away from time-consuming and error-prone manual processes. The resulting move towards automation also could better prepare organizations for the advent of post-quantum cryptography. Well, the bottom line is this policy change is because of the huge uptick in attacks by black hats that are leveraging aging digital certificates. While this will certainly be a step towards making the internet a safer place, it is also going to hit the IoT world very hard. I, for one, already have several slightly older, ruckus access points that are nearly useless because they sat in the box for years, and now you can't log in via a normal web browser because the certificates are expired. Well, I'm going to help you out on this. There is all you should do for the process. To get into the old gear, there is a workaround. Once you're on the web page that you can't get into, just anywhere on the page, type in, this is unsafe, all lowercase, all run together with no spaces, and that will let you in. Now, there's normally a bunch of warnings. This is considered a unsafe practice. But if you're trying to get into older gear that has not been updated, you know, their firmware's old and so forth, and the certificates are way, way out of date, this is how you can save it. Now, this is going to be really great for especially nonprofits that are trying to reuse older gear that's been donated to them. It's going to be really good for school IT specialists at schools who almost never manage to get absolutely brand new stuff. Even the donations of a lot of gear. I just got a whole bunch of surveillance cameras donated to the Central Florida Fairground, and the certificates on those are all expired. So thankfully there is a way. TLS shortening lifespans is a good thing, but there is another side to that coin.
Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, we have the News Bites. But before we get to the News Bites, we do have to thank a really great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Collide. Collide is a device trust solution that ensures unsecured devices can't access your apps. Collide has some big news for you. If you're an Okta user, Collide can get your entire fleet to 100% compliance. Collide patches one of the major holes in zero trust architecture, device compliance. Think about it for just a minute. Your identity provider can only let known devices log into apps, but just because a device is known doesn't mean it's actually in a secure state. In fact, plenty of the devices in your fleet probably shouldn't be trusted. Maybe they're running out of date OS versions or browser versions. Maybe they've got unencrypted credentials lying around. Well, if a device isn't compliant or isn't running the Collide agent, it can't access the organization's SaaS apps or other resources. The device user can't log into your company's cloud apps until they fix a problem on their end. It's that simple. And for example, the device will be blocked if an employee doesn't have an up-to-date browser. Using end-user remediation really helps drive your fleet to 100% compliance without overwhelming your IT teams. Now, without Collide, IT teams have no way to solve these compliance issues or stop insecure devices from logging in. With Collide, you can set and enforce compliance across your entire fleet, Mac, Windows, and Linux. Now, Collide is unique in that it makes device compliance part of the authentication process. When a user logs in with Okta, Collide alerts. Now, they alerts to compliance issues, and it prevents unsecure devices from actually logging in. It's security you can feel good about because Collide puts transparency and respect for users at the center of their products. Now, sum it up, Collide's method means fewer support tickets, less frustration, and most importantly, 100% fleet compliance. Visit collide.com/twiet to learn more or book a demo. That's KOLIDE.com/twiet. And we thank Collide for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's time for the bites. Generative AI, it's the new hotness, right? It continues to be a trend, and it really has impacted different parts of the industry. Now, there are lots of conversations going on around this and developing really different points of view about just how impactful this type of technology will be on jobs. Now, in some intriguing stats that we saw from UiPath surveys in this VentureBeat article here, it's given us some really unique sneak peek into the automation generation. It seems 60% of workers are now banking on AI and automation to cut down burnout and boost job satisfaction. Pretty interesting. We all love work-life balance, right? Well, this is supposed to help with that. Now, there's a little bit more here. A hefty 57% view employers favoring automation more positively. And it's no secret that workloads are piling up, with 28% juggling extra duties thanks to the hiring freezes that are out there. Of course, the layoffs as well. And this is pushing us to rely on our AI buddies even more. Now, this automation generation thing, it isn't just really a buzzword. There are some pros who are leveraging AI to actually streamline operations, boost creativity and productivity. Most of them are convinced AI can not only take the load off their backs, but they're also supposed to enhance their job satisfaction and their productivity. Now, I've actually seen some of the productivity here and the impact. In fact, I use GitHub Copilot. Obviously, it comes from Microsoft, but it really has helped become more productive coder. I'm an experienced coder. I've been doing it for 25 years, but GitHub Copilot is essentially giving me an AI sidekick on the side, gives me code suggestions. It kickstarts with just a line of code, or even I can just ask it some questions. and it uses OpenAI Codex, and it's really trained on every programming language out there. And I can tell you, it definitely helps things, but also more importantly helps on things like JavaScript, because it's one of the largest public repos out there that has JavaScript in it. Now, to supplement this a bit, UiPath's study also suggests that workers globally are leaning into automation for routine tasks like data analysis and IT issue resolution. In fact, we'll talk about that even more a little later with our guests. And this generation also values flexibility, time for learning new skills, and focus hours for critical tasks. Gen Z and millennials are particularly turned to this potential of automation to elevate their work performance. So, folks, as work pressure increases, AI-powered automation is trying to step up here as an assistant for tasks which could make you more productive and take away those time sinks, and also promising less burnout, more satisfaction, and of course, maintaining our human touch in the automated world. Now, I want to bring in my co-host here, because this is a pretty interesting set of points of view. Now, it's all about very positive, but there are also some negatives. Curtis, I want to throw this to you first. Now, from an enterprise perspective, what do you see the biggest potential impact here, whether it be in the positive or even on the negative side here?
Most of my attention has been on the use of generative AI in cybersecurity. So understand that's sort of my point of view. But I think it's worth talking about the fact that most of the people who are talking about it in that context are talking about it being an aid to effectiveness and an aid to productivity rather than a replacement for human workers. 5 or 10 years ago, we were talking about how AI might replace tier one analysts in the cybersecurity industry. But what we're seeing now is more a thing of AI helping tier one analysts cut through the clutter more quickly. And I will say that one of the things that we're also hearing about is the rise of new jobs around cybersecurity. And I think this is something we may discuss in more detail a bit later on in this blip. But I heard a number of people at the RSA conference talk about a couple of very specific new job titles that are likely around generative AI as people lean into learning to use it as a tool. This is something that I think most people see as a tool rather than a potential danger to their employment, even writers, because we've heard a lot about how generative AI is going to replace reporters, is going to replace writers, and it won't. For some reasons, some of them are legal, because generative AI tends to plagiarize left and right. Some of them tell you where they're getting their answers from, and I give credit. I want to give a lot of credit to Microsoft for this. If you use the Bing generative AI, it tells you precisely where the language is coming from. Not all do. But the other is that it doesn't write all that well. There are tells. Every human writer has ticks and tells, but most of them are put off as quirks of the human's voice in writing. Well, the generative AI voice isn't real attractive, so there's still going to be a role for humans in taking what comes out of a generative AI and putting it into pleasant human readable form.
It's interesting. You bring up some good points around the positives and negatives. Brian, I want to throw this to you because obviously the industry will run into some challenges with AI. Obviously, some of them are feeling it's like Curtis saying, there's a level of worry that they're, the correctness of AI. So people trusting it a little too much. How do you think this will impact maybe even from IT perspective, AI in this case?
I think actually a lot of the quote jobs that have disappeared because of AI have already disappeared. Take for example a phone operator. How many people out there have actually called an organization of any sort and initially got the call answered by a human. It just doesn't happen. It's always been those stupid press one for this or whatever. Well, generative AI has a huge potential for actually making that less onerous. You know, I don't know how many of you have, like, I want a human, dang it. Or I said accounting. We've had that over and over and over again. And I think generative AI has the potential of maybe making that less painful. It has certainly started to be more useful on things like production lines.
Right.
It's actually a very difficult task that if you have, say, a machine part, you know, something's coming off a milling machine, and it's probably made out of something like aluminum or steel, so it's nice and bright and shiny because it just came off the milling machine. And then you have to turn it right side up so that it's lined up for the next machine. Or a bottle at Budweiser being in the right position so that the labels don't go on, you know, the wrong way. That's the type of thing, that job's long gone. The having a human do those kinds of tasks disappeared, I don't know, Lou, what do you say, maybe a decade ago? You used to work with Anheuser-Busch, right?
That's right.
And so getting rid of the inefficiencies, I think, is going to be the big tool, so to speak, making it more friendly to people. There's a lot of FUD going on about AI, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. So for a lot of folks, I tell you, your jobs aren't going to disappear. They're probably going to let you age out, you know, before anything starts happening. Even still, you know, like at a lot of positions within, say, the federal government, when they started closing down divisions, even closing down bases, a lot of times they did it slow enough so that people could age out, retire, and things like that. I think that's going to be a real reality of generative AI. It's not going to kill your jobs now. It might in 5 years or so, but hopefully by then you've already retired. So the big bad AI job stealing monster, it's FUD.
You know, it's pretty interesting that you brought up the my Anheuser-Busch work days. I mean, even back then, we're talking 20 years ago, where they were using machine learning AI bots, essentially. And these are like mechanical bots, actual robots, to take away mundane and dangerous tasks, like, for instance, moving large beer pallets or moving beer from the brew house into the, you know, and putting them on the trucks. So this way there's less injury there. You know, it wasn't trying to take away jobs. It was really trying to get away from not only loss prevention, but also, actual potential injury. And they used to have lots of injuries, things running into things, you know, things breaking, that kind of thing. And so that was their main reason to do this. And it kind of left room for people to go do other jobs that were sometimes more interesting, sometimes more impactful, things that couldn't be done by these types of technologies. And so I think that's a pretty interesting take on it. Obviously, there's always going to be the side of things where AI might do terrible things and be, you know, and might try to take away jobs where people should have the jobs for them. But I want to throw this to Kurt, because Kurt, you know, in the industry, obviously, it's probably fairly appealing to, you know, the C-suite and the financial people of the world to save some money on some of these jobs, as well as reduce the potential for, you know, injury and lawsuit and so on. Is this something that's a good argument for continuing the integration of AI, or is it something that could create a more of a, you know, people worried about their jobs?
Well, I'm not sure this is an entirely either or thing, because on the one hand, I'm a big proponent of using automation wherever it can be used to make the workplace safer. And let me say this, I come from a family that had a lot of underground coal miners in it. I'm very familiar with that kind of work. I worked in gray iron foundries and steel mills early in my life. I'm familiar with all of those dangers. So if we can use automation to reduce the exposure to hazards, then I'm for that. Now, doing so will inevitably take human beings who were employed doing that out of the equation. But I also like to think that these tend to be human beings that have skills, have intelligence, have more than a little bravery, and there are very profitable new ways to which they can be employed. So I think that we're going to see disruption. I mean, AI, just as robotics, has been a disruptive technology. AI is going to be a disruptive technology because, and we're very on the very early edge of that. So I think that over the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to see how it plays out. There will be companies that attempt to use it in a more human replacement fashion. But I think those are going to be companies that are seen to have made a poor use of it. And I like to think that the market will not reward them as much as it will the companies that make the better use of the technology.
Great points, Kurt. Well, we have lots more to talk about here, especially in the AI world, just how it might impact your IT organization and your DevOps organization. So that's our guest is going to drop in and drop some knowledge there. But before we do have to thank another great sponsor of this week in enterprise tech, and that's Worldwide Technology. WBT is at the forefront of innovation, working with clients all over the world to transform their businesses. And at the heart of WBT lies their Advanced Technology Center, or ATC. Now, the ATC is a research and testing lab that brings together technologies from leading OEMs. There's more than $500 million in equipment invested in this lab. Now, the ATC offers hundreds of on-demand and schedule labs featuring solutions that include technologies representing the newest advances in cloud, security, networking, primary and secondary storage, data analytics and AI, DevOps, and so much more. WWT's engineers and partners use the ATC to quickly spin up proofs of concept and pilots so customers can confidently select the best solutions. And this helps cut evaluation time from months to weeks. Now, with the ATC, you can test out products and solutions before you go to market. You can access technical articles, expert insights, demonstration videos, white papers, hands-on labs, and other tools that help you stay up to date with the latest technology. Not only is the ATC a physical lab space, but WBT has also actually virtualized. That's right. Members of their ATC platform can access their amazing resources anywhere in the world 365 days a year. And while exploring the ATC platform, make sure you check out WBT's events and communities for more opportunities to learn about technology trends and hear the latest research and insights from their experts. Whatever your business needs, WWT can deliver scalable, tried and tested, tailored solutions. WWT brings strategy and execution together to make a new world happen. To learn more about the WWT, the ACC, and gain access to all their free resources, visit WWT.com/twit and create a free account on their ATC platform. That's WWT.com/twit. And we thank Worldwide Technology for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's my favorite part of the show. We're going to get to drop some knowledge on the Twiat Riot. Today, we have Ram Vaidyanathan. He's IT security evangelist from ManageEngine. Thank you for being here, Ram.
Thank you so much, Luke. Nice to be here. Thanks, guys.
Yeah,
you're nice welcome. To meet you, Brian. And
nice to meet you. Now, our audience, obviously, they're from the complete spectrum of experiences, whether they're entry level, they're CTOs, they're CISOs, and some of them, they really like to hear people's origin stories. Can you take us through journey through tech and what brought you to ManageEngine?
Yeah, for sure. So my name is Ram. I've been with ManageEngine for the last almost 10 years now. And I've been in cybersecurity during that entire time. And, well, I look at cybersecurity from two different angles. I research the ways in which attackers can strike organizations and steal their sensitive data. So I like looking at the offensive point of view, because I believe that that makes you a good defender. You've got to know what makes attackers tick, what motivates them. So yes, in terms of the defense, I also look at the ways or research the ways in which organizations can deploy the right tools and solutions to defend against these attacks. So that's what I've been doing for the last 10 years at ManageEngine. Before that, I was with Honeywell. I was in security, but not cybersecurity. I was in physical security before then. So I was into CCTV cameras, intruder alarms and such. I have a degree in electrical engineering. I went to school in Canada. I live in India now, but yeah, I did go to school in Canada. I went to university there. So that's been my background, yeah.
Fantastic. Now, you've been in security for a long time. So I have some kind of, I guess you could say, trending topic for you. Obviously, as the economy has changed worldwide, obviously, it's in, how do you think it's really impacted IT priority, especially maybe even the cybersecurity world?
Right. So it's all about economics, right? You have scarce resources, especially in a downturn, and you've got to make the best use of that. So we can't deny the fact that it does have a bearing on IT. But when it comes to cybersecurity, a lot of the experts, they say that it is not going to really affect it that much, because nowadays people do realize the importance of security. And during a downturn especially, and we've seen this during the pandemic and even in the recession of 2009, we had a lot of security attacks. We had a lot of cyber attacks going on. And attackers make use of this FUD, as Brian was referring to earlier, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. They make use of that and they deliver very compelling phishing attacks. They just prey off of people's fears. And so cybersecurity, people are still going to be very, much into that. You know, companies are going to invest in cybersecurity solutions. So I don't really see that much impact on the cybersecurity side of things, especially this downturn. I don't think it's long term. It's kind of temporary. I think we're going to come back soon.
Right. Now, obviously, anytime we see a shift in the economy worldwide, people are spending less in different areas, and sometimes they spend less in the wrong areas. And then we see a set of emerging threats that come out of it. Are you seeing maybe a trend there of some recent emerging threats based off of how organizations are putting their focus up?
Oh, definitely. Ransomware has been a big threat over the last few years. And, traditionally we had ransomware in the on-premises side of things, but nowadays ransomware is moving to the cloud. So we have ransomware in the cloud. That's one trend that we are seeing. The other is ransomware as a service. We referred to Scriptkiddie sometime earlier. It doesn't really take that much sophistication anymore. People can go onto the dark web and they can rent out malcode, or they can just purchase them off of the dark web. And some of these malcode are really, really sophisticated in that an attacker can actually see the extent of the damage that they cause on different organizations. They have like really neat looking dashboards. And, personally, I've seen this. And yeah, that's where it's going, as far as ransomware goes. The other thing is a lot of attacks on IoT and operational technology. And we also have cases of ransomware morphing into something more sinister called disruptionware. So that's what I see right now.
Now, I guess I'm almost certain that I might know the answer to the next question. I think at least we've been covering a lot of this. But as we see the budget shrink, economy changes, what are you seeing organizations do to supplement support here?
Yeah, see, it all starts with risk, right? That's the most important thing that you've got to look at, whether it's a downturn or it's not a downturn. That's the starting point. You've got to look at your risk holistically, and you've got to have a risk register, something that you work on continuously. So I've seen companies have risk registers that have thousands and thousands of line items. So they have actually taken a lot of pain to document all of these risks. And then for each risk, you've got to look at the likelihood of the risk and the impact of the risk. And then you've got to prioritize the risk. Then you can make use of frameworks like the MITRE ATT&CK framework. So now that you've identified the risk, how does that risk manifest itself? What are the different behaviors that attackers could exhibit in order to, you know, prey on that. So you can actually use something like the MITRE ATT&CK framework, which is really, really effective. It gives you the tactics, techniques, and the sub-techniques that attackers could use. And from there, you can identify the gaps. Well, these are the things that attackers could do. Now, what do you really do in order to protect against that? What kind of solutions do you deploy to take care of that? So it kind of goes down that way. You can also make use of frameworks such as NIST. I really like that. Some people really swear by the CMMI. I really like the NIST CSF framework. And, you know, when you want to like, especially in a downturn, you know, when you want to invest in security solutions, so the NIST actually has five core elements, right? So you have identify, you have protect, detect, response, and recover, if I get that right. So you've got to make sure that you have solutions across the entire spectrum.
Yeah, I think you definitely answered my, I was going to ask you actually, obviously, when people are going to spend some money now, they have to be a little bit more frugal. What are they going to spend it on? Sounds like that's some good options. Are there some other options, especially around security, when people need to focus, you know, very intently on things like ransomware or even operations? What are some technology they can spend some cash at right now that's not going to break the bank, but it's going to make a big impact?
Yeah. Before I answer that, one larger point that I would like to make is, the most innovative companies can actually get out of this downturn much stronger. So the companies that invest right now, you know, they can think of it as an opportunity. And, you know, they will definitely do much better than companies which take the other point of view, right? They don't really do anything. And, you know, they can. So we saw that during the pandemic as well. The companies that have invested in the right technology, they were better prepared for what struck them later. And we've seen this in multiple, you know, other events across time. Now, one of the things that companies could invest in, especially when it comes to cybersecurity right now, is anomaly detection using machine learning and artificial intelligence, where you're not strictly going by rules that security analysts write in order to detect threats, but you are basically letting the system learn on its own. You're letting the system learn what the baseline is for a particular user and entity within the network. And you do this for all the users and entities within the network. So anytime there's an anomaly, there is some sort of a change in the behavior that's exhibited and it goes against the baseline, you know, it just triggers an alarm. And you could look at different kinds of alarms, different types of anomalies that occur in the network and be better prepared.
Yeah, I think one thing I'm seeing definitely in the industry is the fact that, you know, AI is helping things, especially around observability, making sure that we can ingest all this big stream data and being able to make more sense out of it and potentially even uncovering anomalies that sit within this data. Now, are you seeing an increased level of AI ops and observability in organizations in specific areas, whether it's network hardware detection or traffic detection? Is there specific like locations where it's being implemented even more?
Yeah, definitely. So AI is being adopted a whole lot more now. There was a time when AI was looked at as a separate tool, you know, something apart from a SIEM solution or an XDR or an EDR. But nowadays, it's being integrated across the space, you know, and, you know, AI, people, some people call it user and entity behavior analytics, you know, the technology itself. It is all now getting integrated into what we call a security analytics platform. It's all consolidated and it can give you the much needed visibility across your network, across your endpoints. And, you know, it's going to do it in a very dynamic sort of a way. So anytime any sort of a behavior is noticed and that, you know, it's not supposed to be noticed, it can increase the risk score of the user or the entity. And in case it goes beyond a particular threshold, you know, we can actually automate certain types of responses to go with that.
Well, we have a lot more to talk about. And of course, I also want to bring my co-host back in. But before we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Lookout. Business has changed forever. Boundaries to where we work or even how we work have literally disappeared. And that means your data is always on the move, whether on device, in the cloud, or across networks, or even at the local coffee shop. And while that's great for your workforce, it's a challenge for IT security. Lookout helps you control your data and free your workforce. And with Lookout, you'll gain complete visibility into all of your data so you can minimize risk from external and internal threats, plus ensure compliance. But by seamlessly securing hybrid work, your organization doesn't have to sacrifice productivity for security. And Lookout makes IT security a lot simpler. Working with multi-point solutions and legacy tools in today's environment is just way too complex. With its single unified platform, Lookout reduces IT complexity, giving you more time to focus on whatever else comes your way. Good data protection isn't a cage. It's a springboard letting you and your organization bound toward a future of your making. Visit lookout.com today to learn how to safeguard data, secure hybrid work, and reduce IT complexity. That's lookout.com. And we thank Lookout for their support for This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, we've been talking with Ron Vadianathan. He's from Manage Engine. We talk about DevOps and just how the security budget trends have changed over time. But I do want to bring my co-host in because lots of interesting stuff here. Who wants to go first? Kurt?
Well, sure. You know, one of the things that I'm curious about is we talk about SecOps. How much are you seeing organizations be able to merge the functioning of these two teams? Because traditionally, security was a team, operations was a team, and they kind of didn't trust and didn't much like each other. So getting them to work together was as much a cultural problem as it was a technology problem. Are you seeing technology bridge that gap, or is there still a lot of resistance in the organizations you talk to about having them work together?
No, I actually see that the different departments, the different teams are working together much more now. There was a lot of friction earlier. You know, we saw that maybe about 5 years ago, 4 years ago. But with technology coming to the fore, especially in the last 3 years, you know, when people were kind of forced to work from elsewhere, work from, you know, remote locations, we've seen a lot of that friction kind of go away. People are kind of coming together now, and technology has enabled that. And as far as your question about operations and security, well, even with SecOps, right, you know, people are nowadays, one of the biggest things right now is, you know, people are talking about the shift left approach in security. They want to catch all of those issues as early in the life cycle as possible. So that's what I'm seeing right now. A lot of CISOs that I've spoken to have told me this. The shift left approach is something that's, you know, very much in their horizon. That's something that they look at very, very closely. It's in fact one of the metrics that they use to kind of gauge themselves how they perform. So the percentage of issues that they catch earlier, that's a big metric that they look at.
Very good. And now you're speaking about metrics. So one of the things that I've been spending a lot of time on is the idea of quantifying risk and really put it, you know, making it something that can be managed, because as we have heard all the way through our management lives, it, only that which can be measured can be managed. How are you working to help put some actual quantification behind that risk? And is that something that you see a pull from your customers about? Or are you having more customers talk to you about putting a number behind the risk?
Yeah, absolutely. This is very, very true that you've got to quantify the risk, especially when you talk to the board. You know, maybe about a decade ago, we didn't have people in the board who were very adept at cybersecurity. Nowadays, there is at least one person in the board who knows security, and there are other people who take security very seriously. But even now, when talking to the board, you've got to put a number to the risk. You've got to put a dollar number to what you're, you know, what you're up against. That's extremely important. And you know, as far as us as a company, the way we look at risk is a little different. We have, you know, basically a SIM solution. It's called Log 360 that we use, you know, we provide our customers with, and they can use this solution to detect everything that's happening in the network, give them the much needed visibility, connect the dots, use AI and ML to not just detect threats, but also, you know, we're working on how we can use AI and ML to respond to threats. But they use all of this and all of this intelligence. And when they go into in front of the board, for example, they can use all of the output and they can actually give a risk number. They can put a, you know, they'll have the tools, you know, with them to actually put a dollar figure to, you know, what they're up against.
Very good. And it's interesting because I do hear a lot of companies talk about using dollars as their risk metric. That's not uncommon. And speaking of dollars, one of the things we've been seeing the last couple of years especially is an increasing extent for cyber insurance companies to drive the purchase of security services, security products, and often to even partner with security providers to reduce the risk of their policyholders. I had one insurance company at RSA be very blunt and say they find that it's much cheaper to help their policyholders be more secure than it is to pay out claims. Are you finding that cyber insurance is part of the conversation more and more? And do you see this as a trend that you think is going to expand?
Yeah, absolutely. That's true. A lot of the customers that we speak to, they, you know, cyber insurance is one of, you know, top of their mind for them. And as security vendors, a lot of the companies in the play also look at ways in which they can partner up with these cyber insurance firms. So that is something that I look at, that I see quite a lot happening as well.
Okay, Ram, I happen to sit on a board of directors for a nonprofit, a charity, and budgets are never what we would like. What kinds of language should I be presenting to the other board members or for anyone that's on a charity where budgets are teeny tiny? Because one of the things I have heard is, gee, AI is going to make it cheaper for me to provide the same amount of security. I should wait until the software gets more robust. What would you say to people like that?
That's a good question. In fact, it's very tricky as well. Yes, you know, on the whole, you're absolutely right. You know, but then it's always evolving, right? Technology always evolves. So when is that exact right time when you want to actually go ahead and make that investment? I think we should stay up, you know, up to date with the times and make that call. You know, really, if you feel that right now the risk that you're under, it warrants you to kind of invest in a security solution, you should actually go ahead and do that, especially if it, you know, gives you a positive ROI. So as a company, you should be able to say that, well, in the next 12 months, this is the risk that we are facing, and this is the probability of that risk. This is the cost if that risk was to manifest itself. This is what the solution actually costs us. And if that is the case, is there a positive ROI? And if you're able to make a compelling argument there, I think the board is very likely to agree with you that, yes, you know, it's actually good. You should go ahead and do that investment right now.
Okay. So everybody that I've talked to is all talking about the multi-cloud, you know, a hybrid environment. What kinds of, is there anything special you need to take a look at in a hybrid environment versus a, say, let's call it a monolithic on-premise solution? What are the pitfalls that you can see?
Yeah, You know, we actually ran a survey. We did a survey just a few months back about the 2023 cloud security outlook at ManageEngine. And a lot of the respondents said that cloud account compromise is one of the biggest threats right now. You know, again, it's an identity-based attack, right? So you've got to be really wary of such threats. Now, this threat is compounded by the fact that a lot of the companies are using multi-cloud or they are on hybrid cloud, right? So here you have a situation where an organization is not just using the services of one cloud provider, but multiple cloud providers for various reasons. It could be cost, it could be efficiency, it could be the fact that you know, they don't want to put all of their data in one cloud service provider. It could be multitude of reasons, actually. So multi-cloud is here to stay. In fact, more than 90% of organizations are on the multi-cloud. But, you know, when this happens, when data is distributed across different cloud service providers, it is also an increase in the attack surface and the blast radius as well. So you've got to have solutions in place that will look at the entire cloud environment. It will give you the complete visibility, connect the dots between the different cloud service providers as well. Whatever service it is you're using, it's got to connect the dots between all of them and give you that visibility in real time.
Cool. Hey, so 15 years ago, I was writing for InfoWorld magazine. I keep bringing the identity management shootout up over and over and over again, because a lot of the promises that we saw 15 years ago haven't been mainstream. A lot of processing power, a lot of complexity. Scripting was ungodly complex. So when you start talking about things like anomaly detection, the scenario we hit those vendors with 15 years ago was, can your solution catch someone whose identity used it for a card swipe to go into the physical plant of the facility, but nearly at the same time, the digital identity was used to open a VPN from, say, Germany? That's the type of anomaly detection that gives a lot of security people nightmares. What do you think? Is AI going to finally help us fulfill the promises of anomaly detection?
It's difficult to answer, unless, you know, we actually do it. We see how it evolves and how companies are actually adopting it. And, you know, where AI goes from here. The place that we are in right now, we can do much more complex things than that. So we can do pattern detection, where it could be a disparate network. You could have multiple things. You could have on-premises. You could have the cloud. You could have endpoints. You could have different servers. You could have multiple things that are there in a network, right?
Well, maybe we should rephrase the question a bit then. Instead of trying to ask you to nail something down, let's ask more of a crystal ball question. Where should we be going? And do you think AI is going to help us get there? So speculate a bit, if you don't mind.
Right. Yeah, the way that I'm seeing it and the way that things have happened, and, you know, especially the last 6 months with generative AI, we were talking about that as well. You know, in the last, you know, 6 months, the way that I'm also thinking, it's evolved a bit. So I think, I want to be really, you know, I want to kind of predict that, yes, AI is really definitely going to help us. But then, of course, it's going to help us to a certain extent because it's going to help the bad guys too. So you never know. You know, it's always going to be a cat and mouse sort of a game. So on the one hand, yes, it's going to help us, but then it's going to become more complicated. And obviously, you know, we are never going to reach a situation where, you know, we are going to be in a perfect world. That's not going to happen.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, since we're getting close to the end of the show, why don't we go into how ManageEngine is meeting these needs and what kinds of things can we look forward to, and have our viewers start drooling on what kinds of solutions you folks have.
Right. So Managigent is a division of Zoho Corporation. Zoho Corporation's makes solutions in the cloud for business productivity. Managigent is the IT management division, enterprise IT management division of Zoho Corp, and we make more than 120 different software, each catering to different needs of IT, from IT service management, endpoint security management, cybersecurity, of course, and IT operations management. Now, in terms of cybersecurity, we have a cybersecurity analytics solution called Log 360 that detects everything within the network, whether it's on-premises or in the cloud. It's able to correlate all the different events that happen across the network, raise alerts, either with the security analyst actually keying in the rules or by using anomaly detection. And then, of course, there is the automated response piece, right? We can't ever forget that. We don't want to be waiting until the security analyst comes and investigates an alert and then takes action. You want the system ideally to take action, at least a certain level of action beforehand. So we also do that, the automation of it. That's what ManageEngine does.
Thank you so much for being here. Can you maybe tell the folks at home where they can go to learn more about ManageEngine before we close up here?
Yeah, definitely. You can go to www.manageengine.com. That's our website. You can learn more about us. You can also Google ManageEngine Expert Talks, where we have a blog about the latest and the greatest in cybersecurity. So if you want to learn more about stuff, what's happening in the world of cybersecurity, please go to, ManageEngine Expert Talks.
Fantastic. Well, folks, you've done it again. You sat through another other best thing enterprise and IT podcast in the universe. So tune your podcatcher to Twyatt. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to my co-host. I want to thank, starting with our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, I know there's some events coming up for you in the coming weeks. Where can people find you and all your work?
Okay, so coming up next week, I'm going to be at Infocom here in Orlando for a day. So I'll be wandering around if any of the Twyatt Riot is doing that. Later on in July, I'm going to be at Splunk's conference in Las Vegas. And about 2 weeks after that, I'll be back in Las Vegas at Black Hat and DEF CON. So I'll be out and about a lot this summer. Would love to meet up with anybody from the Twyatt Riot. In the meantime, I've got a new piece out at Dark Reading. And I have another piece coming up on Dark Reading this coming week. So please be sure to check me out. That's darkreading.com/Omdia. You'll find me there. And keep up with me on the social networks. I'm on most of them for the moment, at least. I'm on Twitter at KG4GWA. Also over at Mastodon, KG4GWA at mastodon.sdf.org. Of course, I'm also on LinkedIn, Curtis Franklin. I'm on Facebook. I'm just everywhere. Go out, look for me, you'll find me, and feel free to hit me up with a direct message on any or all of these to let me know you're following and ask me any questions you have about network and enterprise security.
Thank you, Curtis. And definitely bring your suntan lotion to the Sin City because you're going to be there a lot. Thanks, Curtis. Well, folks, we also have to thank our very own Mr. Brian Chiebert. Great seeing you as always. Where can the folks at home maybe get in touch with you, find where they can learn about some stuff that you've been working on, that kind of thing?
Well, I too will be at Infocom, especially since it's in Orlando, and I'm going to be dragging a bunch of the Central Florida Fairground people around to meet with folks, vendors doing digital signage, video walls, and things like that, because you want sparkly stuff for expo halls, right? Anyway, speaking of sparkly, I talk about the sparkly I get to play with on Twitter. I'm ADVNETLAB. You can see some of the sparkly stuff I work with, underwater observatories. That happens to be FTTH fiber, fiber to the home. And that's the board of directors, the chairman of the board helping me run fiber and HVAC and so forth and so on. Anyway, we're going to do all kinds of cool things, and we would love to hear your suggestions for show ideas, show topics. I try to weave threads through the booking so that we can hit major topics that you folks, the viewers, seem to want. and make noise about it. So make some more noise. I am Cheebert, spelled C-H-E-E-B-E-R-T at twit.tv. You're also welcome to throw email at twit.tv, and that'll hit all the hosts. We'd love to hear your show suggestions. We'd love to hear your questions, and we'd like you to stay safe. Take care, everybody.
Thank you, Cheebert. Thank you guys for being here. We also have to thank you as well. You're the person who drops in each and every week to watch and to listen to our show and get your enterprise and IT goodness. So go to our show page right now. We want to make it easy for you to watch and listen and catch up on your IT news. So go to our show page, twit.tv/Twyatt. There you'll find all the amazing back episodes, the co-hosts and show information, of course, guest information and the links that we do during the show. But more importantly there, next to those videos there, you'll get those helpful subscribe and download links. Support the show by getting your audio version or your video version of your choice and listen on any one of your devices or any one of your podcast applications, because we're on all of them. So definitely subscribe and support the show. Plus, you may have also heard another way to support the show is definitely subscribe to Club Twit. It's a members only ad-free podcast service with that bonus Twit Plus feed that you really can't get anywhere else. You really can't. And it's only $7 a month. That's right. There's a lot of great things that come with this, but one of them is also exclusive access to the members-only Discord server. You can chat with hosts, producers. You can have lots of separate side discussions and channels, tons of channels on there. They also have special events, which are a lot of fun. So definitely join Club Twit. Be part of that movement. Go to twit.tv/Club Twit. And of course, Club Twit also offers corporate group plans as well. It's a great way to give your team access to our ad-free tech podcast. The plans start with 5 members at a discounted rate of $6 each month. You can add as many seats as you like there. It's a really great way for your IT departments, your tech departments, your developers, your sales team, whoever, to stay up to date with access to all of our podcasts. And just like regular memberships out there, they can join the Twit Discord server as well as get that Twit Plus bonus feed as well. Plus, also, we want to talk about families as well. Families can also enjoy this using our family plan. That's right. It's only $12 a month, and you get 2 seats with that and $6 for each additional seat after that. And you get all the advantages as that single plan as well. So definitely a lot of options for you. Check out Club Twit. Be part of that movement. twit.tv/Club Twit. Now, after you subscribe, you can impress your friends, your family, your coworkers, whoever. Give them the gift of Twyatt, because we have a lot of fun on this show. A lot of interesting tech topics, trends, all that kind of stuff. So I guarantee they will find it fun and intriguing as well. So definitely share it with them. And if you've already subscribed, we do this show live. That's right. Live on the live stream, 1:30 p.m. Pacific time on Fridays. We do it live at live.twit.tv. There you can select your stream of choice. And you can see all the banter behind the scenes, see how the pizza is made. And you can get to see all the fun stuff that we do before and after the show. And of course, if you're going to watch this show live, we also have the infamous IRC chat room, Twit Live chat room that we have. And you can get to that by just going to irc.twit.tv and join the Twit Live chat room there. And of course, we have a lot of great characters each and every week in there. And in fact, we get some amazing show titles, some pithy and very crafty show titles in there from them each week. So thank you, everyone, for being there and supporting Twyatt. Now, if you want to get in touch with me, I want you to do so, because I love hearing about your ideas, talking tech topics, whatever. Definitely hit me up. You can hit me up at twitter.com/LouMM, direct message me, whatnot. There I post all my enterprise tidbits. Of course, I'm on Mastodon as well, LouMM at twit.social. You can DM me there as well, show ideas, whatever. Plus, also, I'm on LinkedIn, Louis Maresca on LinkedIn. I have lots of great conversations there as well. A lot of people hit me up there for show ideas and conversations about latest releases, AI, chatbot, ChatGPT. I talked about quite a bit last week. So definitely hit me up there. I enjoy just interacting with everybody. Now, if you want to know what I do during my normal work week at Microsoft, definitely check out developers.microsoft.com/office. There we post all the amazing ways you can make Office more productive for you, customize it in the way you want. And of course, if you have Microsoft 365, open up Excel right now and check out the Automate tab. That's right. That's where I live. That's where my team lives. We offer Office Scripts, which is the new way to record macros and run them, whether it's in Power Automate, run them right there on the window, and you can basically customize them using JavaScript APIs. A lot of fun stuff. Definitely check that out and be part of that as well. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Everyone, especially to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support Twyatt This Week in Enterprise Tech each and every week. We really couldn't do the show without them. So thank you for all their support over the years. Thank you to all the staff at TWIT and the engineers at TWIT. Of course, thank you one more time to Mr. Brian Chi, because he's not only our co-host, but he's also our tireless producer. He's a double threat guy there, and he does all the bookings and the plannings for the show, and we really couldn't do the show without him. So thank you, Chibert, for all your support. And of course, thank you to our editor for today before we sign out, because they make us look good after the fact. Cut out all my mistakes, so thank you very much. Of course, our amazing technical director, Mr. Ant Pruitt. He's not only a technical director, but he's also a content creator, a pretty great one too. He does hands-on photography here on TWIT, and it's a show that I learn from each and every week. Ant, I can't wait to what's coming up this week. Can you give us a quick taste?
Hey, thanks, Mr. Lou. I appreciate the support. This week on the show, I don't really get into any tips and tricks, but I throw a question out there to all of the hands-on photography listeners regarding photography and ethics. Pretty touchy subject, and I think it should be discussed. So go check it out, twit.tv/HOP for hands-on photography, and send me a message. I'm curious to hear what everybody else thinks.
Fantastic. Love it. Thank you, Ann. Well, until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep quiet.
Hey, I'm Rod Pyle, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra Magazine, and each week I join with my co-host to bring you This Week in Space, the latest and greatest news from the final frontier. We talk to NASA chiefs, space scientists, engineers, educators, and artists, and sometimes we just shoot the breeze over what's hot and what's not in space books and TV. And we do it all for you, our fellow true believers. So whether you're an armchair adventurer or waiting for your turn to grab a slot in Elon's Mars rocket, join us on This Week in Space and be part of the greatest adventure of all time. We'll be right back.